This is Voice of Bainbridge. I'm Philippe Boucher. Our guest tonight is Ron Milton, who has been the director for Pirates of Penzance, and who is one of the founder, if not the founder, of Ovation. Ovation is a community musical theater group. Can you explain to us how it started and where the idea came from?
Well, I've been involved in theater for about 25, 30 years, and I've directed, and I was a professional actor, and so a lot of people get started in theater as they get the acting bug, and I've designed sets and designed lighting, and I was a professional puppeteer for a long time, and I've done programs for a couple of million kids live in the public schools, and I worked as an artist-in-residence in Alaska and Washington. I was at Kennedy Center for the Arts artist, and I got tired of traveling. And the 4 years before I came back to Bainbridge.
You came back, meaning you were there before?
I was here for about 10 years, and then we left. And for about 4.5 years, we lived in New York and Paris and Houston and L.A. Finally worked my way back to Bainbridge. And when I got back here, I said, I'm tired. I'm home. And I love the island. And I love the sense of community about the island. And so I was talking to my wife, Mary Jane, and I said, how can I make a living and pursue what it is I love to do? Well, it's very hard to make a living in theater on in an island this small. So I said, how can I pursue what I love doing?
without making a living.
Graciously, Mary Jane, she's worked in broadcast for about 25 years now. And her job allows me the luxury of pursuing my avocation here. I'm in sort of a semi-retirement here. Retirement as far as getting paid for your work, but I'm making about half a penny an hour, I think. So I said, how can I do theater and stay on the island? And I directed Sound of Music for Bainbridge Performing Arts, and I met a wonderful group of people while I was there, and they chose their next season. They chose not to use me as a director for the next season, and I said, I don't want to wait 18 months to do some more theater, and I had a wonderful experience doing Sound of Music here in the island. So I thought to myself, and I asked Mary Jane, and we decided that we'd form a musical theater company, and we would try to design it after the European companies that I studied at as a young man. And once we'd made the decision, around the kitchen table, we decided to start the company, and we did a couple of fundraisers just a little over a year ago now.
And you mentioned that you said that you had a model after the European companies, but why are they different from the American companies?
Well, that's a very good point. The European companies that I worked with as a young man were ensemble theater companies. And it was ensemble more than just working on the particular piece you were working on. It was a lot of it was a way of life and a way of approaching life, and that the company it's almost like a second family, and they rehearse longer. The rehearsal period is longer, and so you can play with the artistic piece you're working on, and you can really examine it because you're taking a lot longer than a lot of American companies take in the rehearsal process, and that affords you the luxury of experimentation and experimenting with the dramatic piece that you're working on, and working with lots of different levels of people allow you to create works that are that I feel are superior than in the works that you take a very short rehearsal period time. Because a lot of times, if you take a short rehearsal period time, when you get to the performance, there's a lot of angst in the company and the cast members. Because it's not really well rehearsed. By that I mean that if you take a longer period, you have so many repetitions that when it comes to the performance, everyone is like a racehorse waiting to run a race, and they're very, very eager to get out on stage and share what it is they've learned about the character and the motivation and the play itself. And so the European ensemble type format works much better for me, because I like creating an atmosphere where the performers, when they arrive on the stage, are wanting to share a piece of art with the audience rather than just perform a play. The performance is the culmination, and that's the product, but the process, the rehearsal process, is just as important in an ensemble company as what you present to the public.
Before we started the conversation, you were talking about, you know, growing up in a ranch and how hard it was and how hardworking you had a bit. I think you just transmitted that. Is that because I think the rehearsal is a lot of hard work? And how do you blend the people who are just, I mean, amateurs in the sense that they love to make theater, but still they're not professionals, and the fact that you have a very high standard? And how do you blend people who have more experience than, or just what it is, but it's very rich to have people who are just beginners and people who are more experienced and lots of hard work?
First of all, you have to have a sense of humor about you and a sense of patience. And you do have to set your parameters for what you expect in the very first 15 seconds that the company meets. In the audition itself, I try to create an atmosphere of that it's a safe haven, that here we try lots of different things and we learn. And you learn as a director and as a performer in every single production that you do. You never know it all. When you start thinking you know it all is when you create works that aren't art. And I'm here to create works of art as in the process of musical theater. Not just cranking out a production. I want to go further than that. I want to create something that affects the community, both in that's why I call it community based. It's based in this community. It draws from this community and some of the surrounding communities, and it gives back to the community just as much as the performers put in. And so it is very hard work. Sometimes we'll work a number 20 times in a row until we have it in our souls and in our memory. And so when it comes time to do it, it pops out. It's called being true to the moment. You create a character and you create a musical scene or a dramatic scene in a musical, and you try to be honest with it. So when the audience is out there watching it, it's to them it's happening for the very first time, and for you it's also happening. You're so well rehearsed that you're playing with it. And that gets back to what I was mentioning before, in that if you rehearse enough, and we have extraordinarily long rehearsal times. We have, for a big show, we'll have 4 months rehearsal, and a lot of time on the pro level, you get 6 or 8 weeks, 10 weeks if it's an extraordinary thing. A lot of our shows.
So all your shows are extraordinary.
They're
just good.
They're extra long in the rehearsal, because the rehearsal is also where you learn about yourself and learn about the company. The company is only as strong, and I every show I do, I try to reiterate this to everyone in the group, even though they've probably heard me say it 50 times before, but our company is only as strong as our weakest link. And theater's been around a really, really long time. It predates the Egyptian planting ceremonies that happened on the Nile. It's been passed on from the Egyptians to the Greeks to the Romans, on up through history until you reach the Restoration and Elizabethan and the Commedia dell'arte. So it's a very long history of theater, and today we go through complex mechanizations, but what we're really doing is telling a story. That's the essence of it. And all the other stuff, the lighting and the costumes, merely support the telling of the story. So I try to work on the performers in rehearsal that they are the number one thing. They are telling the story with every bit of their body. A lot of times in contemporary acting schools, you're taught to act from the neck up and from the wrists down. And I try to get every single person, every child, every person of every acting level to act with their entire body and their mind. So the mind and the body are working together to tell the story. So one isn't lagging behind the other. And I think what it ends up doing is it pulls the audience into the story much quicker and much more fully when they see people out there really enjoying themselves, whether it's a dramatic piece or a funny piece. If you're a performer and you really love what you're doing and you become unconsciously competent, then the audience knows that, so they sense that.
I certainly sensed that when I attended Pirates of Brandon.
And I think
and previous ones too.
Yeah, I think Pirates was extraordinary in the fact that one of the director's job is to make sure that all the performers become unconsciously competent before opening night. But with Pirates, we rehearsed just long enough that I actually had to hold them back and give them different situations in rehearsal because they were ready about a week before we actually performed. And I didn't want them to peak too early, but it didn't matter. The entire cast became unconsciously competent. Yeah. At the same time. And so going into opening night, they were all out there having an incredible time, and there was no fear. There is anticipation when you're performing, but if you fear that you don't remember your lines, or you don't remember your blocking, or not only fear, but if you don't trust each other.
Especially in a play like that, we have so many actors.
There was you know, 46 or 47 performers, and literally thousands of intricate moves going on in when they're all going different directions at the same time. You have to trust, every single person has to trust the other performers that if something goes wrong, someone will step right in and pick it up. And as in any show, a few things did go wrong here or there, but the audience never knew and the performers never missed a beat because they were ready. They were all unconsciously competent at the same moment. And that's a wonderful feeling when you're on stage because it's such a freeing feeling. It allows you to play and go places that normally that you never achieve, or you only get maybe one performance out of a string of 10 or 12 where it's just a really sharp, crisp performance. And this give this cast their credit. They were incredibly fun. I saw the show many, many hundreds of times before it went on, and I watched every show, and every single show was crisp and clean, and they were playing with the audience. And when you act in a show like that, you invite the audience, and you remove that fourth wall, you invite the audience to play with you. And because an audience always comes expecting to suspend reality, but when a cast is playing like that, the audience willingly jumps into the suspension of reality and enjoys the fun and becomes, in essence, part of the cast. And that's another difference between a lot of European companies and American companies. And I think that European companies break down the fourth wall much quicker because of their training. Sometimes they will. I've been in, when I was a young man, I trained for 4 or 5 months in a show before we ever had a chance to perform it. And there again, and when we did perform it, the audience was an intricate part of the performance. And it's playing with the fourth wall and the audience actor relationship. An ensemble company creates an environment where that happens much more frequently than a company that is star driven, where you have one real big star and everybody else sort of supports the star.
And you mentioned something else that goes maybe with the fact that you have such long rehearsal. It's just like a family, second family building. because people, when they spend so much time together, I guess they get to know each other, and they, and then there's this, just this, this movement of the group helping each other as well.
It's,
I find fascinating.
It's a wonderful thing to see as a director, the sense of camaraderie and community that that is created in a, in large cast like this, and in this approach to community-based theater. It's fantastic to see. They share their problems, they share their triumphs. We've been at rehearsals where I'll be giving notes after the rehearsals. I give notes, unlike a lot of professional companies, I don't email the notes or anything. I give the notes live after every single performance and after every single rehearsal.
How do people take that?
Well, sometimes I'll give a note and I'll say, Royce, you were really hot tonight, and the company is so tight that they spontaneously applaud.
Like, oh, yeah.
And it just creates a wonderful sense of belonging to see a group supporting each other like that. Because in our everyday lives, we live in a very complex and highly competitive and highly charged world where a lot of times people do not take the time to get to know who even lives on the other house next to them.
Yes.
Or who goes to the same restaurant with them. And that sense of camaraderie and community that the cast develops is one of the big draws for me, and I'm sure it is for the cast, in that it creates many dinner parties after rehearsals where politics are talked about, art is talked about, life, babies, doctors, ailments, whatever. And being like that is like having an extended family that actually cares about you. And being alone in large cities, if you've ever been in a large city, and feeling alone is a terribly lonely thing. It's like you have a bubble around you. And I think that one of the things that this type of community-based theater does is it allows people to come back together again, because again, the rehearsal hall is a safe environment. And I try to allow no negatives into the rehearsal.
After the director, I've seen that a little when I was attending some of the rehearsal, but how you help people saying, okay, this wasn't, I mean, it's not your words, this wasn't okay, but then still helping the person to support the person to
improve.
Right,
you can ask someone to create a different way of accomplishing what you want without negatively tearing them down. And I try to impress upon, especially the young performers, and I look at it, our group as a teaching company, in that we have a lot of very young performers, right along seasoned performers, and I'm a big proponent of having a system where you learn by the elder performer, and I think that it creates a sense of unity, and I've seen young performers just flock to someone after they've done a particularly good scene, and they see other performers doing that, and what it does, it creates good future performers and good audience members in the future. And our public schools don't have a lot of training for to create performers or audience members in the future. And so we get a lot of people that don't know what good audience behavior is. And I think that's also one of the jobs of a community-based theater, is to create the opportunity not only to perform but to appreciate performances in a constructive way. So.
And all the Ovation shows have been really as well combining generations. I mean, I don't know what the youngest and what the person who was the oldest, but they were grandmothers and they were grandchildren
I had, in Pirates, we had one performer that was 10 and one performer that was nearly 80. And that's quite several generations, really. And they all learn from each other. The older performers see the freshness and the fresh approach sometimes, and the honesty that young performers who have not learned how to give a cliche performance, but really give a performance from their heart and what they believe, and it comes across very, very honest. And the younger performers see the polish and the preparation. A lot of our performers were incredibly well prepared and professional in their approach to the roles, and so there was learning that was going back and forth between the generations all the time.
And what about the musical part in it? I mean, this is a musical theater.
Yes.
Right? So it's not. What is the difference with theater? But okay, it's just not musical. What does it add?
Well, the thing about musical theater is that you can't fake it at all.
If you say the bad note, you hear it.
The audience. I'm going to hear it. The musical director is certainly going to hear it, and the audience is going to hear it too. And so we really strive to teach the both the young and old alike to listen. Listening is one of the big mechanics in singing. If you listen well, you'll know immediately when you're not on key. And so we also drill relentlessly. We break a singing phrase down one note at a time and rebuild it and by sections. And our musical director, Karina Lapid-Munter, is extraordinary. An absolute extraordinary musical talent, both in her own vocal production. She's a wonderful coloratura soprano, and she's also a fantastic pianist. She is extraordinary at working with all kinds of people to get the group sound, and she has an amazing ear, and she, in a fun and yet exciting way, can build musically, much like you start off building a house. If you build a good foundation, the rest of the house will be square and true. And so we always attack whatever the musical is that we're doing and build the foundation part first, and then we'll get up to what we're trying to do artistically with the piece. But first it's the notes, the timing of the notes, the parts, the blending of the parts, and then how we're coloring the music in our particular way that we're looking at it. And she's absolutely, I've been around the horn a few times in the theater business, and I have yet to come across another music director that is so extraordinary in their talent to both recognize the potential, because a lot of times we'll be listening to a particular singer in an audition, and then when we compare notes at the end of it, I'll ask her, well, what do you think about this? And she'll say, I hear a potentially good voice out of here. All it's going to take is a little work.
It's a lot of evolution. I mean, I've seen that as well. You attend the audition, you think, oh, no way. And then still you pick the person, and then you hear the person later, and it's amazing improvement. I mean, it's a...
Yeah, it is. When you're looking, when we're auditioning people, we look with an eye of the potential. Some people, you hear them audition, and in your mind you go, wow. That's a phenomenal voice, and yes, I'd love to have them in the company, but you don't get to that place, and there's not those kinds of people don't grow on trees. What you're listening for is, if I work with this person for and we work hard together for 3 or 4 months, that is the kernel there that will grow like an acorn growing into an oak tree. Is there a particular ability in this person to grow? And that's what I look for a lot. I look for the potential of the performer, somebody who would give me their heart and soul, and great work ethic. I believe is always preferable over somebody that already has a bag of what I call a bag of tricks, that is slick, but doesn't have any heart and soul. Because we're looking to create art that goes beyond just looking or sounding okay or good. We want to create art, and we have this mantra that we always talk about. We say art isn't easy, and it wasn't supposed to be. Art is hard, and if you're not willing to work hard to create great and exciting pieces, why do it? And it's to me, it's that simple. You either strive to create wonderful art, or go do something else. And so that's where I'm at.
So you have picked Sounds of Music, mm-hmm. and then Pirates of Penzance. I mean, as plays that already existed, but you have created your own play as well. So you make this sort of balance between plays that you are going to create yourself, you know, stories that you created.
Last year I wrote a show called The Big Holiday Broadcast, 1943, and we set it in a mythical radio station on Bainbridge Island called The Farm Report, and we tried to work a lot of the local history that was happening at that time into this farm report, and make the farm report the island's form of community-based theater of that time period. And then we brought in a slick NBC company and from New York that ended up being stranded here and happened to do their big broadcast.
Because you had this bug on you to write something.
And so I wanted to write something that would use a lot of the local material and create a chance to use a lot of the young voices in. So we did the singing commercials, we had the cats,
that was very funny.
Kids, and it was fun. And the audience, I knew it was funny when I was writing it, but it turned out to be so much more so when it was actually performed. As happens in every dramatic work, the director could only take it so far, and then the performers themselves finished the creation, and we had some wonderful characterizations that came out of the play that I'd written, and it was just a very heartfelt, again, a community-based approach to theater, and it was so popular that we're bringing it back this year, but we're moving it 1 year forward, and it'll be a different storyline, and I'm working on writing on that right now.
So we are going to have another... Something different.
It'll be something different, but there's few holiday traditions on the island. We thought this is a wonderful opportunity for people to come and see a show and sing along with it in places. And
so you'll keep the sing along as well.
Yes, yeah. There'll be sing along in the show and music that we've all heard and enjoy around the Christmas season, but that's not on the radio. It's it's not on the TV. It's not on the CD. It's actually happening live, and that's the other thing about theater is an ephemeral moment. You can record it, and it's fun to do that to play songs around your own family's home, but. But to go to the theater and to see something that it only happens that once and then it doesn't happen again, and no two performances are exactly alike, and that's creating art that lasts for the moment, and it's extraordinarily exciting to do.
You have been at the BPA, you have been at the high school with Pirates, and you were at St. Barnabas.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little difficult to be there. So how do you feel about the places where you can perform on Bainbridge, do you think?
Well,
you'd like to find a new place, or what's your dream?
Well, we'd like to have a permanent home, of course. And that's what we're working towards eventually. But until that happens, the space really doesn't matter. We've got a lot of theatrical equipment that our group has put together and that I've had for many years, and the space is important in that we want the audience to be comfortable. But as far as performing in, we'll perform wherever we have to. and we've performed in three different venues here in the island, and they've all been very interesting and very successful in their own ways. We hope to, in the future, have a space of our own that that we can create art in and that people can come to and be comfortable in. And but that's what we're working towards. But right now we'll take any space that is reasonable and we'll turn it into a theater.
Well, thank you very much and all my best wishes for the next performance then.
Thank you, Philip.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.